Now entering Nerdist.com.
Big Pop Fun.
Welcome to another episode of Big Pop Fun with Tom Wilson, the westernmost podcast in the USA. If you don't count podcasts made in Woodland Hills, Calabasas, or Malibu, because after that, it's just ocean. Here's Tom.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Big Pop Fun with Tom Wilson podcast. I am Tom Wilson, your lovely and fluffy host, bringing you all the best in podcasting that can happen within the next hour. It's not the best in I don't know. I don't listen to a lot of podcasts. I just do what I feel and talk to people that I think are interesting. Welcome to another magical sleigh ride of enchantment and wonder as we welcome a new year, as we welcome 2013. Oh, little 2013 was peeking its head around the corner from 2012 because everyone was saying, let's just finish this year and get it over with and move on to the next one. So 2013 was peaking a little early, but didn't get in a lot of trouble. Welcome, welcome, welcome 2013. Wahoo, Dares, 2013. Welcome, new year. We hope it's better than the last one. Hey, 2012 was okay. I think we're expecting a little too much of years. I think we're putting a little too much pressure on years now that where they feel like they have to outperform all the years before them. And 2013, you know, in our recorded history of, I don't know, what is it, 6,000 years now, maybe of recorded human history, that years are getting, that's a lot of pressure. 2013 has to beat, well, it has to beat the Dark Ages, which were, you know, okay. Easy to beat the bubonic plague years, yes. But it's tough to beat the ascendancy of the American Industrial Revolution. Or I don't know what I'm talking about. Not the post-World War II, late 50s, where cars with gigantic fenders were plentiful and people could just eat bacon and eggs all the time without caring. I mean, all the time. Every meal, bacon without care. I mean, 1957, just in bacon eating alone, must have been, I don't know, pretty good. And those people lived a long time. Let's face it. They lived long enough. They lived into their, you know, early 60s, and then they dropped off. But really, you know, they were done. After that much bacon, really, don't be greedy. Let's drop off at 62 because you had a lot of bacon and leave something for somebody else. I don't know what kind of tangent I'm on now, but welcome back to the podcast brought to you by art, by my book, The Masked Man by Tom Wilson, available on Amazon for the Kindle and for the Nook and on iTunes for the iPad and the iPad Mini and the iPhone and the iPad. And just your eye. It can actually, boy, won't that be weird when you have a USB port in your head and you could just download it into your eye and see it in front of you? That's weird. Yeah, I read a thing about contact lenses that will have the ability to have text on them. So won't that be fun to actually have to look over some report as you're trying to actually make eye contact with a person? But by that point, the screens will have taken over. So who needs contact with a person? You don't need to look at people. We have screens for that. Yeah, sorry about the introduction. I am, I freely admit, and I have before on the podcast, of an artistic temperament, which is a good thing when it's useful because you are creative and you can create things out of your head. And you, in a sense, are the fun factory, and you just think up things and think up ways of putting them in front of people and maybe selling tickets or maybe selling books or maybe selling paintings or something, and that's how things operate. It's terrific. It's also very convenient sometimes in social situations because you have this little bit of a reputation of being just a little Your head's in the clouds. Oh, that Tom, he's thinking deep thoughts, or he's doing the, he's considering the rewrite on the script, or he's whatever. He does this. So he's not really, under the rules of everyone else. He kind of marches to the beat of his own drummer. That's very famous, huh? You march to the beat of your own drummer, especially when your own drummer is really late for stuff. Or just daydreaming when your drummer should be paying attention. My drummer has a very, very unusual set of beats. Not all in perfect timing. When that costs you, the other side of the creative sword, the other edge of the creative sword is days like today when I had a meeting down in Hollywood that went very well, thank you. But I had two other things to do. I had to drop off things at my manager's office down in Beverly Hills, and I had to pick something else up. So, of course, I planned, as a good planner does, plan to do all of this in one fell swoop, because though I live relatively close to these places, Hollywood and Beverly Hills, it's a little bit of a hike. So you want to put them together anyway. Went to the meeting in the morning, had the other thing, had the thing to deliver in the trunk of my car. And, of course, meeting went well. Fabulous, fabulous, fabulous. Went back to the car, turned on the radio, I suppose, and Bachman Turner Overdrive, taking care of business. And I was probably drumming the dashboard. I had the window open. It's beautiful this time of year in Southern California. I was enjoying the breeze. And what did I do but turn my car, head over the hill, and drive back to my house, where I made myself a wonderful turkey sandwich, a couple of pretzels, a little glass of iced tea. I put it down on the dining room table, and I reacted like Bugs Bunny would react when drinking poison or something, you know, with the physical thing. My neck actually shifted 20 feet to the side as I went, oh! You know, because I completely forgot dropping the thing off at my manager or picking up the other thing, the things that were actually important things to do that I mean, it's thrilling to me the extent to which I completely forgot about them. I was just breezing along with the car window open. Just ain't nothing gonna break my stride. Nobody gonna slow me down. Oh, no. So I was just having, speaking of which, I don't know who that sang that song, but I don't think he had another hit after that. Ain't nothing going to break my stride. Nobody going to slow me down. And then he stopped. But so I forgot things and I chalk it up to my wonderful artistic temperament. But today it cost me. So there's that. Brandon Bird is my guest this week. A long time ago, I talk about it within our conversation, so I won't over-mention it now, but quite a long time ago, I'm an artist and a painter of sometimes unusual things out of the ordinary, and someone, a friend, had sent me the link to a painting of Brandon's of Christopher Walken in his basement making robots. Really neat looking painting. Christopher Walken looks very satisfied as he builds robots in his basement. And they just said, hey, check this out. I thought it was really neat. Looked up the artist, Brandon Bird. Hey, terrific. He's doing interesting stuff. Then maybe, I don't know, a couple of years went by. And then somebody else sent me a link to a product. It was an, Eric Roberts lunchbox. With Eric Roberts on a horse and in clouds and a pink lunchbox that's an Eric Roberts lunchbox that I thought was just terrific. A wonderful painting of Eric Roberts. And there's, oh, it's Brandon Bird, the same guy. So I looked him up, looked up his website, saw all these very, very intricate and well done paintings. But also with products. He has, a Sam Waterston cell phone cover. Those kinds of things. Really very, very, very dedicated to that middle brow popular culture that I guess is both ironic and humorous, but also very well done. So I emailed Brandon and asked him, hey, I love your stuff. I sometimes have artists on. Would you like to be on the podcast? And he was cool with that. So, I mean, of course, this boy, being doing my podcast and contacting people, you know, the contacting people and the actual making a date and time when we can do it, because my schedule is weird, their schedule is weird. It's the toughest thing for the podcast. So I think I've been emailing him back and forth for the past maybe 10 months, but we finally got together in a loft space that he has in an undisclosed location in downtown Los Angeles, but a very, very industrial part of the inner city of Los Angeles. He's one of those artists who lives in a loft with big, big windows that flood light into his loft, where he creates paintings of all sorts of, you know, from Batman and Superman and Mitt Romney, all kinds of paintings in his studio. But I found his work interesting, and I thought that you might too. So I hope you enjoy my conversation with artist Brandon Bird.
It's Big Pop Fun.
Brandon Bird. Brandon Bird is my guest. Is that your real name, or did you change it for showbiz reasons? Well, not that you're in showbiz. You're an artist.
No, that's my real name.
That's your real name?
Yeah.
It's a good artist name.
Yeah, it's like a cartoon animal.
It is.
Like
sort of like a bird.
Yeah, like Woody Woodpecker.
Oh, yeah, like Brandon the Bird.
Yeah, or Bugs Bunny.
What's your middle name?
Joshua.
Joshua. Yeah, don't go with Brandon. Joshua Bird.
Yeah.
Brandon Bird's better. Mm-hmm. Are you from the West Coast?
I'm from Sacramento.
Sacramento.
Yeah.
Middle California.
Mm-hmm.
What did you... Were you doing art from the very beginning? Were you one of those artsy kids?
Pretty much.
Did you try to be a jock? Did you ever try?
No. I could hardly, run a mile. And people always be like, are you related to Larry Bird? And then... as soon as I reached my full adult 5'4 height, they stopped asking.
Yeah. Other than being 5'4, you look exactly like him. You're a dead ringer for an incredibly miniature Larry Bird. I'm just kidding. But what did Dad and Mom do in Sacramento? You're not sure. Okay. That's
My mom was a medical technologist. She basically worked in the hospital doing blood stuff.
Okay.
Like matching blood in the laboratory.
In the laboratory or something.
Yeah, wow. Yeah. Uh-huh. And she worked the graveyard shift the whole time we were growing up.
Really?
Yeah. So she'd go to work at 11, midnight.
With kids. How many kids?
It was me, a younger brother, older brother, and then we have a much older sister. So it was kind of she was more or less independent.
She was out of the house when you were a kid?
Pretty much, yeah. By the time I was 6, she was off to college.
Yeah.
But yeah, my mom would my dad was around, but, you know, I kind of don't know why he didn't take us to school and pick us up.
Because mom would get off work and take you to school in the morning.
Or sometimes, I guess, our dad would take us to school, but she'd wake up in the middle of the afternoon, pick us up, take us back home, and then go back to sleep for a bit.
This is all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
All the time she would break up her sleep and then go and then just blood work all night.
Yeah.
She didn't draw the blood. She was just in a lab or something.
She was in the hospital laboratory.
Looking at slides of blood.
Yeah, send this to the lab and they'll match the blood and send it back down. And
all night long. Did she ever try to work in the daytime?
I mean, now she's retired, but kind of leading up to that when there were no kids anymore. Because we all vanished.
You all disappeared from Sacramento?
Pretty much, yeah. But she weaned herself off that and gone on to like...
Because I would think, if you just look at slides of blood, all night, 3:30 in the morning...
No, it was...
You would kind of think, I need to make a plan where I'm not doing this, at 3:30 in the morning.
Yeah. No, my mom... it was she didn't seem to mind, but at the same time, I would not recommend that for somebody who... it's almost like for that whole 10, 12 years or whatever she was doing that schedule,
mm-hmm.
I feel like she maybe missed out on real life.
She kind of put off living?
Yeah, yeah. Or just, kind of being aware of stuff that was
going on. And what did Dad do?
He was like...
Instead of,
did real
besides estate. Sleeping through your being done at school.
He did real estate, never really made any money at it. Kind of a ne'er-do-well.
Oh, Dad was kind of a ne'er-do-well. Is he still? Are they still alive up there in Sacramento?
Oh, yeah. They're divorced. But
oh, they're just, divorced. And Dad just there. Kind of... Dad wasn't a troublemaker, though. Was he a troublemaker? Or was he just kind of on the sofa a lot, talking about real estate deals that seemed to...
Kind of like that. Kind of like that. Like, just like, well, you know, pull your own load, dude.
Oh, you were saying that.
in your head. Like, my mom worked, like, you know, for a two-parent, theoretically two-income household, like...
It was really one?
Kind of, yeah.
And it was really about looking at blood slides at 3:30 in the morning.
Yeah, yeah.
So mom had not much of a choice, I guess. Yeah, I mean, she was sort of like, that was pretty good money, I suppose.
Yeah.
For Sacramento.
Yeah.
Where you could easily be, I don't know. Milking goats, or what do they do in Sacramento? No, Sacramento is a major city in California, of course.
It's totally major.
It's a very, very major city. But, wow. So you came out of that with a little bit, with a drawing pad and a bunch of color pencils.
I was like the guy in, you know, like in your class, like, oh, that guy's the drawing guy. Like,
really?
Yeah.
Even kindergarten?
I don't really know when it started.
Is there, like, you don't?
I mean, I was always into drawing, but I don't know when I was like, this is going to be it. This is what I'm going to do.
Did it come? Does
that may have been maybe like first grade when I was six.
In first grade?
Yeah.
Does that come? I mean, the realization that that's your thing, that it's something that both you enjoy and you're good at, does that come from outside of you, from the approval of other people? And the teacher going, wow, look at what Brandon did.
I think it's a little of both. Because if it's just something you like and you're not encouraged, like, you'd have to be really driven to actually, like, keep going without somebody saying, like, yeah, good job, like, keep at it.
Uh-huh.
Because, yeah, like, when I was six, I was really into, like, Transformers. And I would come home from school and just, like, just color them. Because they're all, like, you know, basically blocks of color.
Sure.
And sometimes I'd, like, make my own, but, like, switch, be like, this is a new character, but his legs are black instead of blue.
But the important thing is that, like, you wanted to draw them, not play with them.
I was super into that. Yeah, like I would come home and look forward to drawing them.
Mm-hmm.
And for, like, an hour after school, I'd make, I don't know how many, like, a dozen or something. And then that's what I do, like, every day for, like, weeks. And I guess it was just, like, as the years went by, you know, getting career, or I'd win, like, coloring contests and art contests.
In the little art show in fourth grade or whatever,
yeah,
you were
the
kid.
Yeah, stuff like that. Like, designing, like, the school newspaper masthead. And so it's sort of like, oh, I'm good at this. I'm going to keep at it. I'm going to keep doing this and drawing the things I like and trying to get. So maybe like 9 and 10 when I was really into, like, I'm going to get better at this. Like, and really starting to get that kind of critical.
So even it was pretty early
in saying this is
a skill set that I have and I'm going to work at it.
Yeah. And just talking about right now, I'm kind of backtracking and be like, wait a minute, when did I start to really...
But 9 and 10, you sort of figured,
I think that's when
I am,
like,
better at this than...
And really started to work at, like, trying to get better instead of just like, yeah, that was fun. Like, next drawing, I'd be like, wait, maybe I can, you know, look at an art book, or, like, started to copy, like, artists that I liked, which were all, like, comic book artists.
Well, you were a kid.
Yeah.
So everything came out of, at that time, out of sci-fi kind of things, or big,
like,
robots.
Ninja Turtles.
Like what a little boy would like.
Yeah.
This is the Ninja Turtles if they fought the Transformers.
I was not that creative.
You were not? No. Big illustration of this is...
No. I wish I was, but it was mostly like fan art, like, which is kind of weird to see a lot of people as adults now.
The people who don't understand that on the podcast, what do you mean by fan art?
Like, I mean, it's kind of weird because now the mainstream, at least in LA, there are galleries who show, like, you know, this is a show of movies or show of, you know, whatever. And it's literally just somebody being like, I really like this movie or this character. I'm going to draw it.
So, like, it's a person who just draws...
like, there's no personal slant to it, or no, like, mixing up of things.
It's just an illustration. Here is Tony Curtis from the movie, whatever, The Great Race.
Here's Tony
Curtis in this outfit that he wore in the movie, and this is just what he looked like.
Yeah, or, you know, just like, I like Star Wars. Here's a picture of Darth Vader.
And you say adults are doing that now, and they
pretty much. Yeah,
but they don't
yeah.
they don't kind of sell that. What do you
they
do
sell
when
that.
You, they sell that to each other or to whom? I mean, I just don't know
I think
who is really out there
that's
thinking.
That's the big question.
Yeah, when you could buy a photograph of it, who's saying?
I don't really know. But there's it's you know there are whole galleries that just that's what they do. They just do pop culture stuff over and over again, and it's.
Do you know of a gallery that people could look up just to see what
yeah,
you
like
mean?
Oh, yeah, like 1988. Like
oh, I've heard
people.
Of that gallery. Yes, yeah, I've been invited. In my position within the popular culture, I've been invited to a couple of shows.
Yeah, I mean, I used to do a lot of stuff with them when they were still showing, like, actual artists. Or, like, they do, like, oh, it's a... No.
And by
like,
that, you mean...
No, I'd literally be, like, they would be, like, oh, well, they would do, like, a video game art show. And then they do 3 months of shows devoted to particular artists. And then maybe they do, well, now it's the movie show. And now it is literally a whole year of group shows devoted to pop culture themes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of weird because it's just sort of like kind of that art thing of just flattering the buyer. Like, oh, you like this thing? You'd buy a picture of Super Mario Brothers? Then here's a whole gallery full of them.
And flattering the buyer, just meaning just approving
just
what
sort
they...
Just sort of like appealing to their taste.
Yes.
And sort of like, oh, what I like is art? Then what I like must be good.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is kind of the same as like, you know, the big, like a New York gallery is sort of like...
A miniature version of the Emperor's New Clothes?
Yes,
is what's happening.
Yeah.
This is how to be hip. This is a movie that you've already seen and like. So if you buy this, we approve of your taste.
Kind of, yeah.
And we'll
have
a bunch more of it next week if you want to come back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And what is your problem with that? Because I think a lot of artists do have problems with that. And what are yours?
Because, I mean, my own personal sort of story with drawing and, you know, like I said, I was like drawing stuff that I liked, but at the same time I was trying in the back of my head to use that kind of as a springboard to something else.
Mm-hmm.
Like it was sort of like, well, I don't just want to draw Batman into infinity. Like, you know, I felt like there was a missing ingredient, and I feel like for me, I found that by like combining it with humor or combining it with like, you know, taking those kind of characters and putting them in this sort of unexpected situation or an unexpected style and adding that like sort of just wait, this isn't just a picture of that thing. It's a picture of that thing through a certain lens.
And what is that lens?
Usually it's a lens of humor. Mm-hmm. Of like, wait, that's a thing I know and recognize, but not in a way I expect.
So a easily recognizable pop cultural image, but it's something. There's something incongruous about it.
Yeah. There's just a little bit of like a little transformative element that's just a little.
Before we get deeper into your work, I would love to see what were you drawing, for example, in high school or at the time when you're becoming almost a young adult or a teenager, and your skill set, I would only imagine, is getting pretty darn good.
You've drawn a lot, and you're
in high school. And what kind of either did you have interests there, or were you still, man, I'm the drawing guy, and I'm just kind of my head is down, and I'm just sharpening my pencils and just working on this. Or did you try to do other things?
I feel like I had a full life. I don't know.
Oh, I'm not saying it wasn't full. I'm not saying it wasn't full
like,
at all. But were you?
Was I still like, this is going to be it?
Yeah. Did you?
Yeah.
Did,
yeah.
That's going to be it. But you went out for swimming or whatever. Nothing. You just
sometimes. I mean, I had, you know, it all kind of revolved around like art and trying to figure out what I would do in that arena. And
so, when your skill set was really sharpening and you were getting good, you move off of other to other areas
what
of drawing?
What happened was in high school, like I would do sort of really pop arty paintings with like acrylic that were kind of like the Lichtenstein, like a comic book, like black lines colored in. And that was because I didn't really know how paint worked. I didn't know how else to do it. You know, like getting the things to blend or...
Right.
And I was using acrylic, which dries super fast.
Acrylic, so yes. Like, as for people who don't know, acrylic dries probably the fastest of any medium.
Yeah.
So it's very difficult. So when you see a painting that, for example, like Brandon said, a Roy Lichtenstein, one of those comic book things,
yeah.
You see a big field of red. You see a big smattering of blue on the lady's, you know, on the lady's dress. All of those things. That's acrylic, and it's easy to work with.
If you're in high school and you don't have any sort of painting instruction, and you're trying to compare what you're doing to like a painting you see in the museum, and you're like, how are they getting these colors to blend and do all these effects? Like, what am I missing here?
And because if you wanted to suddenly have that lady's, let's say she has a blue raincoat, if you want that to turn and for it to look a little bit three-dimensional, acrylics are challenging.
Yeah, I mean, you can add stuff. I didn't know this at the time. But you could add stuff to acrylics
medium
to
in order
slow
to,
down the drawing. But, you know, again, I was just a kid in high school being like, what am I missing? So I was painting in that particular style because it was the only way I could get the paint to work. Like, I could draw pretty well, but I was just like, how does color work? How does...
And what sizes would you do? Were you doing kind of regular things in
like
a drawing?
Like 18 by 24.
Yeah, that
kind of
thing.
I thought
that
was like huge.
Right. Just a medium sized thing on a wall.
And then when I got to college, I deliberately, I was like, I want to figure out how this painting thing works.
Yeah. Like, what college?
I went to UC Santa Cruz.
Wow, okay.
Basically, I got a scholarship there. So it was like, oh, I could go to this school
in
for
art?
Free? Yeah. No, the scholarship was just like a general
Like an academic scholarship. Yeah, excellent. Yeah. The Banana Slugs.
Yes, the Banana Slugs.
It's a great school. Great school.
Yeah, and as it turned out, I learned exactly what I needed to learn. Like, I had a really good like set of instructors for intro to painting, and I kind of approached it with just like pretending as though I knew nothing already about art and was just sort of like, teach me. Show me how this stuff works. And
so you came in to use kind of their equipment or what they did and just say, I'm getting that beginner's mind. I'm going to come in and just...
Yeah. And when I took intro to painting, I looked out and got like the one intro teacher who really was like on the ball and able to like teach how oil paint worked.
Mm-hmm.
And it was suddenly like, oh my God, like I can paint not just in the one style that I'd figured out, like the pop art thing, but like I can do... all kinds of styles, like, because the paint has so many different uses and ways to manipulate it. And that's when I really started to be like, wait, I can make a painting that looks like an old painting, like an old master kind of painting, but I could stick like Mr. T in there,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, some other silly thing. And I'm like, oh, that's really funny to me. And then that's when kind of the humor thing really kind of clicked in.
In college.
Yeah, yeah.
That incongruity, I can make an old... Like you know, from it would look like the 1600s, but it is a portrait of Darth Vader.
Yeah, or
it's that kind of thing.
Yeah, that sort of like the little unexpected twist there.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started kind of from there. I just kind of went, you know, like leading up to, you know, putting Eric Roberts on a lunchbox,
right?
Which is kind of like the same. This is not what I expect to see on a lunchbox. Therefore, it's.
Right.
Hopefully.
Is all your work funny, or do you see a twist in it that you find funny?
I would say yes. And
that began at college, really.
Yeah. And I think when I started doing stuff more with like the gallery in 1988, I got in this kind of more, you know, celebrities doing funny things kind of shtick. But there's which is still, like, you know, a reliable, like, thing to fall back on. But I like doing, you know, like, handsome landscape portraits of Sears. Like, to me, that's hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I find that kind of stuff isn't as hilarious to people.
Is it social commentary in its humor? Or what do you find
I don't know.
About it? Because I think I know, you know, I work a lot at Nickelodeon, and I was showing paintings there. And I mean, I think, of course, you're not alone in finding the in a, I don't know what how to put it, the celebrated banality of the mid-level celebrity or the
like,
Sears store.
It's kind of like stuff, you know, as a kid. You know, like I've said, I like sort of raise and all this stuff.
Yeah.
And there comes a point where you start to realize that you know, this stuff is fun, but there's also, if you really think about it, it's kind of silly. Like, there's just this underlying, like, silliness.
So is it taking something that is ultimately frivolous seriously?
Sometimes.
Because you're doing a large oil painting.
Sometimes, yeah, yeah. Like, sometimes that's a joke. And sometimes it's also about maybe, like, look, there, Roberts on the lunchbox. That's frivolous, but at the same time, it's kind of like, you know what, Eric Roberts, he's kind of cool. You got to give him that. That's. It's not like I'm making fun. It's not that kind of like criticism.
But you have him on a unicorn.
Yeah, yeah. It's having fun with things rather than because I think that's a response to in college. You know, UC Santa Cruz is a very like activist, liberal kind of campus, especially in the art program. And I felt there was a sense that, like, if you're going to do pop culture stuff, you had to be really angry, like, you know. Capitalism is bad. This is bad. You know, there was that kind of feeling. That was kind of the work most people were doing. Like, really kind of, you know, criticizing culture. Like, culture is bad. And I'm just kind of saying, like, culture is kind of silly. Like, let's have fun with it. Mm-hmm. Not like, let's burn it all down.
So you have several. So you've done a lot of work. And I didn't know. It's in oil now. You work exclusively in oil?
Pretty much, yeah, yeah.
Which, as you described, and we could describe to people who aren't familiar with the media that artists use, that oil is, it's only a difficult medium because it makes a mess of everything. Because once you get it on your shirt or on a surface, it will never come off. But it dries very slowly.
Yeah, so you have time to mess around with stuff, and then you can work. I usually work in layers, which is why I don't produce a lot of stuff, because it takes forever to make, because you're basically kind of building a flan or something. You're putting down layers and waiting a day or two for them to dry and then going on top of them. And in the end, it looks great, but it takes forever.
I don't think a flan looks great at the end, though. I mean, I think your art looks good. I would compare it to a churro or some other kind of Mexican treat.
I'll go with that.
At least my paintings I consider a churro, where yours I do see sort of a flan-like like manner about them. Why have you not moved off into anything else? Is this successful for you, or do you still find, you know, a formal portrait of Mr. T is just, you just like the joke? You're, in a sense, that a very gentle, artistic comedian of the culture.
Am I getting sick of it?
No, not are you getting sick of it, but do you do other things? Or have you considered, like, going through your blue period where you just...
Not really. Because
have you done a year of landscape painting or of different paintings?
No. I mean, I feel like everything I do is kind of a little different.
Uh-huh.
I mean, to me, like, there's always going to be like a switch up between, you know, like doing something that's kind of a product, like Law and Order Valentine's or the lunchboxes, and then also doing painting. Like, to me, there's enough variety that I'm not compelled to be like, oh, I'm sick of this. I need to just do something, you know, complete 180. And I mean, I'm not saying I won't get bored or try something else, but it seems like
I don't mean enough for it to be boring. I just to decide to do something else for a while.
Yeah, yeah.
As and artists I'm often
just,
do.
I just imagine that artists do that because they're bored with what they're doing, or they want to sort of force a change, which I think is, like, you know, an important thing to do. But I feel like within the scope of what I do, there's enough different alleyways to follow that I don't necessarily need to just make a clean break and, you know, do bowls of fruit or something. Like,
I wasn't suggesting bowls of fruit, although
I mean, that's the other thing, is that
bowls of Fruit Loops, possibly.
I do not know what else I would do.
No, but it's now quite a long time ago.
Yeah,
I suppose. But a friend had told me, hey, you have to check out this guy. You have to look at this painting, just one painting in particular. And I said, oh, great. I love to look at artists' work. And it was Christopher Walken.
Yeah, building a robot.
In his basement, building a robot. Yeah. That got quite a lot of attention for you, didn't it? I mean, it seemed to be around the internet a lot.
Yeah, yeah. And that was one of those things where that was maybe 2004.
Was it?
And that kind of what had happened was after I graduated college in 2002. And the other kind of important thing I learned in college besides oil painting was how to put together like a rudimentary website.
Mm-hmm.
And in like school, they don't really tell you how to be an artist, like how to actually make a living at it or show. I mean, I remember being told, you know, how to make slides and stuff.
Slides of your art.
Yeah, nobody makes slides anymore.
No, no, no.
So it was sort of like, I'm like, well, you know, I think this stuff would be funny to people, but I don't really know how to get it out there. So I was like, well, I can make a website, so I'll make a website of my art and put that online and see what happens. And it took, you know, several months, but eventually people started, you know, finding it and showing it to their friends, and I started getting linked around a lot. But I made kind of a mistake in hindsight, which is that I didn't really label stuff very well. I kind of wanted the joke to be like, oh my God, where did this painting come from? Oh my God.
And just for it to stand on its own, and that's just the image.
Yeah, so what kind of happened, like especially with the Christopher Walker painting, was that people would find it and forward it, or like take it and add a caption to it.
Oh, right.
So a lot of, even now, people will be like, oh my God, I've seen that painting. You did that? Oh my gosh, you have other paintings that you did?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, did I shoot myself in the foot somehow by like not putting just my name like right on that thing? Because it's, like I said, it's popular, but a lot of times it's like no context, no attribution. Like,
so, well, that's another question is the value of that painting enough that people saw it? Is that why you did it? Or is it important for the painting to have your name on it?
Kind of a little of both.
Yeah.
It's
I mean, I agree with you. It's important that people need to know that you made that because you're proud of it, because it's your work. And if they're, you know, if they're ripping it off wildly, which happens with everything on the internet, is just, hey, everything's free.
Yeah.
You could just take it and put bunny ears on the guy and you own it. but yeah, your name should certainly be on it.
Yeah. And it kind of only bothered me when I actually started making a living off art and was like, you know, like people need to, it's kind of like, you suddenly have like a brand, like you want people to know about your stuff because you know that that could lead to, oh, now I see all your stuff and now I want to buy a print. And whereas before it was kind of like, oh, I'm just doing this for shits and giggles.
Right. And just as a side note, as you were building your website, I was still photographing my paintings onto slides, even onto 4x5 transparencies, which was a gigantic, huge waste of time and effort as you're taking them to galleries and people are saying, you know, people just don't do this anymore. It just doesn't matter.
Yeah. You know? I mean, it was weird because sometimes I would like have the sheet of slides and like mail it to a gallery and then we just got, you know, mailed right back.
Yeah. Like, I didn't, by the time I was doing it, I think it was so, it was such a ridiculous thing to do that I just wasn't getting them back. They were really either trashing them or just making fun of me going, look at the guy. He's living in 1974. He sent us slides. And I would have to call the gallery and say, did you get a few sheets of expensive slides to print that I might have back. So what was Christopher Walken painting a robot? Was that oil on canvas?
Yes.
And what size was that?
That was maybe 20 inches by 30 inches.
Okay.
Like, it's really hard for me to work kind of beyond the reach of my arms.
You don't make big paintings.
Because I do a lot of like really fine detail. Or like the Christopher Walken one, there's like a pencil underdrawing.
Mm-hmm.
And then the oil's kind of thinly laid over it. So I do like a detailed drawing most of the time first. And that's really hard to do if you're working super huge.
Working big.
Yeah, yeah. Unless you're, you know, one of those guys who actually, you know, where it's like the skill is in the brushwork.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm more, I rely too often on that.
On the drawing,
as
opposed to the brushwork. So artists would say you're a very tight painter.
Yeah, yeah.
They would say your paintings are very tight, meaning they're very detailed, that you use tiny brushes in order to put a little sparkle in that eye and whatever.
Yeah.
Whereas
yeah.
other artists just use big, thick brushes and just go, that's the guy's eye.
But sometimes, I mean, it's remarkable to me when, like, you know, somebody's working huge with, you know, the stroke of the brush is in their arm, not their fingers,
mm-hmm.
and they're still able to like make everything work.
Right.
You know, where you're like, oh wait, I step back, and that somehow all turns into the thing it's supposed to be.
Right. Like, so did you show that painting in a gallery or anywhere?
I think I showed that at a gallery at Rock LaRue in Seattle.
Oh, in Seattle. So it was. Did it get famous when you still owned the painting? You know, did you still have it and people were talking about it?
Yeah.
So then it went to a gallery, and did it sell out of that gallery?
No.
It did not.
No.
Even though it's a famous painting, everyone's seen it and passed it around, and there it is physically, but kind of no one.
It's really weird how, like, almost sometimes galleries don't matter in that sense. Like, that's not going to be the primary way people see work anymore.
And do you think, like, that's true today?
I think it's partially true. I would love to show my stuff in like I want people to be able to see the actual physical paintings.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's the thing I'm making. And, you know, like we've talked about, like working with oils creates a certain effect that is pleasurable to see in person. But at the same time, like, most people see my stuff on the internet and like it anyway without, you know, experiencing the power of the physical piece or whatever.
Uh-huh. So they've seen, like, it on the internet.
Yeah.
And that's what their relationship with you is. I get the joke.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
I'm not going any deeper than that.
And it's not necessary that they go deeper. Maybe, mm-hmm. maybe it's enough to know, like, this is a painting. This is not a Photoshop.
Right.
Like, there's still, like, that acknowledgement of this thing is, you know, like, somebody took the time to make this.
Well, that's the struggle of so many artists now in 2012, 2013, as we're getting into, is that, yes, all artists are saying, you know, that took a lot of time to make. You know, that wasn't, like you said, that wasn't 8 minutes on Photoshop just cropping and slicing things, other different photographs. That is an oil painting that I studied for very hard on. And people tend to go like, oh, yeah, great. Click. Uh-huh. And then just go to the next image of the photo. As you know, from even art shows or festivals.
Yeah.
The festival in the park. And there's a person who has many wonderful oil paintings or anything or gouache or acrylic, anything.
Yeah.
And they've worked very hard on the paintings. And the guy next to them, it's sort of Photoshopped pop images of whatever it could be. It's all cowboys and it's all a Western thing. And they sell a lot of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's kind of these plexiglass neato frames. And it's
I know what that is. That's like the thing I like, all jazzed up.
Right. It's sort of a giant Howdy Doody thing that's kind of that he printed off the internet and Photoshopped. Buy that.
It's kind of, I don't know, I feel, I don't know, I'm trying to think of a way to say this that isn't pretentious, but I feel like that's the thing that if you're actually interested in making art, that you're trying to like overcome or fight against. Like the quick and the easy. You know, like, you don't want to be the guy that's just, oh, I'm just printing these things off the internet and adding a filter. And,
right.
You know, right. Like, I don't know. But maybe that's just...
How are you doing with that struggle in your life as an artist?
I don't know.
You don't know? I have no idea, man.
For a while, I was like really kind of bitter and like burnt out against... like kind of all this stuff. And,
right. To make you not want to do it?
Or I was sort of like looking for ideas that were more, I'd be like, no, that idea is stupid. It's not like smart enough. It's not.
Oh, so then your inner voice starts.
Yeah, my inner voice was kind of like caught me in this loop.
Yeah.
And then eventually I was just like, you know what? Like I have like a painting of Peter Dinklage dressed as Wolverine.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like a really simple joke. It's not like a highfalutin concept. But I was like, oh, that's kind of funny to me. And that was the kind of thing that I would have, like, 2 or 3 years ago, would have been like, that's not smart enough. Don't paint that. But instead, I was like, you know what? I'm just going to do it because people will like this. It's going to be fun to paint. and it's still like way better than any of the ideas anyone ever sends me.
Oh, people send you ideas.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And they're always, I'm always just like, I'm usually kind of disheartened because it's stuff that's like, it's almost like art Mad Libs.
Mm-hmm.
Just like, there's like a recent one like, you should paint Hillary Clinton wrestling the Iron Sheik. And I was like,
Hillary Clinton wrestling the Iron Sheik. Just,
yeah.
Just like, incongruity for the sake of incongruity.
Yeah, yeah. Just like random shit happening.
Yeah.
Like I don't know. That's not that interesting to me.
Right. Andre the Giant with Donald Trump in a headlock.
Yeah, yeah. Just like, you know, A plus B, two weird things. And I don't know. I guess a lot of what I do is random, but it's still a little searching for just the right subject to make the joke with, if that makes sense.
Yeah, but, makes sense to me. Yeah. So let me just, this might not interest anyone, but I'm just interested because doing such a detailed drawing on the canvas, do you put a lot of gesso, which is like an artist primer for people that like it's a layer? Because drawing on canvas, it's lumpy.
In the past year, I finally started working on boards.
Oh, okay. Uh-huh.
Like cradled hard boards. And it's so much better.
Well, for you, I mean, for a very detailed pencil guy before the painting, what people don't, you know, like when you're working on a canvas, as I said, it's lumpy all, because of the weave of the canvas.
Yeah,
so it like would be very hard to make a detailed drawing with a pencil. And then you have the give of the canvas. Mm-hmm. So when you're pushing down, it kind of bends a little bit.
Yeah.
So it's hard to be very accurate.
For a while, I, you know, would always search for these, like the perfect piece of canvas, like, you know, super taut and.
And
nice
very
edges.
A very fine weave.
Yeah, yeah. And it's gotten really hard. Like,
and those canvases, let's say, are very expensive.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
Like a portrait linen, which is a kind of canvas that people will do for a fine portrait of a little girl or whatever. And it needs to be detailed because it really needs to look at that, look like that girl when you give it to the family. So it's a very fine canvas with a very flat surface that you stretch very tightly, but that's very expensive.
Yeah, yeah. And so just like last year, just for some illustration work, I got just a couple basically Masonite panels.
Yeah.
And like gestoed them and like worked on that. And I was like, wait a minute, why haven't I been doing this forever? Because it's so much nicer because you're just dealing with like a nice, flat, smooth surface. And you can add with the gesso's a...
Like a primer for artists. Yeah,
it's like a white acrylic paint kind of.
Yeah.
And, you know, you could kind of do textural things with the gesso, but you're not dealing with that kind of grid of the canvas under there. And
you can even go pretty big sizes, but Masonite is heavy.
Yeah, I mean,
you go birch plywood.
There, like those are big cradled.
Oh, those are Masonites.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Uh-huh. And yeah, they're heavy.
And that's
but
24
like,
by 30, maybe 24 by 36.
That might be 30 by 40.
Oh, I don't know. I have a pretty good eye, Bird. I have a pretty good eye for sizes, Bird. I don't think that's 30 by 40, but we'll measure it after we record the podcast. Okay. And then I guess I'll announce at the end of the podcast whether you were right or I was right. And I'll probably lie just to make it seem like I was right anyway.
That's fine.
I see a painting behind you of some person with a halo. Is that a halo? The framed.
That is not a painting that I made.
That is. Oh, okay. Okay. Well, I just wondered who you decided to lift to some level of holiness within their celebrity.
I think it's a digital thing called Lenny Grabs a Dog. It's Lenny Briscoe, Jerry Orbach's character from Law and Order.
Okay.
He's getting a hot dog. And that was for a group show I put together years ago about Law and Order. Because I was watching like...
So you did a group art show?
Yeah.
Just about Law and Order.
Spell Law and Order. Because I was watching like a million episodes of it, and I was kind of like,
I have to paint this.
Pretty much, yeah. I was like, this can either be my life, just sitting here and watching this show, or I can make like a project out
of
it. And I put, and it was also the same time when people were kind of finding my site and like linking my stuff around. So on the website, I was like, hey, kind of a call for submissions. Like if anyone wants to do a Law and Order thing, you could.
Oh, you did it. Yeah, you just called out for Law and Order paintings.
Yeah. And unannounced, that artist, Brandon Hunt, just sent me that framed Lenny Briscoe eating a hot dog.
And that's an original?
I think it's a digital print.
It's a digital print of his painting.
Yeah. In a very nice frame.
In a very nice frame, and Jerry Orbach has a halo.
Yeah.
While eating a hot dog.
Yeah.
That's very, that's...
But I mean, that's the kind of thing to me is, like, funny.
Uh-huh.
It's pop culture, and it's sort of celebrating the icon, but...
Well, absolutely.
And it's also an icon that isn't celebrated. You know, like...
Right. Oh, I think there's an artist who hasn't done, I think, to your success level or to your numbers of paintings, but Art Van Kampen was over at Nickelodeon, and he would do... Have you heard of Art?
Yeah.
He just does formal portraits, but uh-huh. they are of Jacques Cousteau, you know, with uh-huh. a scuba tank.
Yeah.
Everything. He does a formal portrait as if he was the wedding photographer of Mr. Belvedere's wedding. You know, those kinds of things.
Yeah,
like Buckwheat
yeah.
from the Little Rascals
yeah.
sitting for a formal portrait. So, I mean, they're really... Look, that's why I've come to you, Brandon. That is why I've come to you. Because I really... Yeah, of course. How can you not enjoy Christopher Walken making robots in his basement? a pretty large painting of that. But then... You know, and then I forgot it, as we do from the internet, and then someone sent me the link to the Eric Roberts lunchbox.
Yeah.
Now, are those two kind of seminal pieces that you've had that people really notice?
I think so.
Kind of the Eric Roberts lunchbox. We can describe. There's not one around, but it is sort of lavender, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a bright pink plastic.
Oh, it's
lunchbox.
Pink. Okay,
and the painting is very lavender.
Mm-hmm.
And it's Eric Roberts. It's like a kind of montage of imagery. So it's Eric Roberts just smiling.
With a twinkle in his eye.
Yeah.
Isn't there? Yeah.
And his cheeks are kind of glistening. And then there's sort of this cloudy pink kind of 80s fantasy movie sky. And there's a floating castle. And there's like a snowy owl flying. And then there's another... image of Eric Roberts just riding a white horse.
With a rose or something. Didn't he have something? I don't know.
He just kind of has his hand to the side.
Oh, okay.
But then there's like, you know, I added kind of that like Barbie princess font that just mm-hmm. says Eric Roberts.
Mm-hmm.
And
that, well, that was sent to me as well. Like, you have to look at this thing. So yeah. have you sold a bunch of those?
Yeah, I mean, well, I got the idea to do lunch boxes last year. And that's sometimes, like I said, I do, it's like an art piece, but it's a product. Like, it's something people can buy, but it's still like a joke object.
Oh, I think it's one of the great gifts. I had tried, years ago, mm-hmm. I had tried to make a Face the Nation lunchbox. and my art skills weren't like yours, and I finally bailed on it. But I think, you know, getting someone an Eric Roberts lunchbox might be one of the great pop cultural gifts that one can give.
Yeah, the thing was, I was like, okay, well, I just have to... I'm like, it's such a simple thing. You just get plastic lunchboxes, and you print stickers, and you just put the sticker on the lunchbox, and it'll be like those cheesy... Like, when they stopped making the metal launch boxes,
right.
they still made those, like, stupid...
It's plasticky ones. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was a plastic with a sticker. And apparently, when I chose to do this, they had, like, just stopped manufacturing them. Like, just stopped. So I had to, like, call, like, a bunch of places and ended up getting, like, 300 black plastic lunch boxes, like, straight from Thermos... And like that whole hallway was just filled with lunchboxes.
Really?
And then, but I was still like, oh man, like pink would have been so great.
Right.
And then this was July. So for some reason, they'd already started like back to school sales. And it was like at Target. And they had Hello Kitty pink plastic lunchboxes for like $4.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I could get those, scrape off the sticker.
Sure.
And just put Eric Roberts on that, and I ended up like driving around like to all the Targets
everywhere
down here,
just buying all the Hello Kitty lunchboxes.
And I think I got like 100 something, and I've sold out of all the pink ones.
Oh, so you're done?
Yeah.
Do you have black left?
I still have some black. Yeah.
Are you going to do a whatever, some SVU lunchbox?
I mean,
or
have, like, odds and ends. I was hoping that I'd be able to like track down another supply, or that Target would have like this year. That
it seems
have.
Odd. I mean, I had no idea that they have discontinued making lunchboxes.
That's what they told me. And then
it just seems wrong, doesn't it?
I randomly found like some new ones at like Ralph's or something, and I was like, oh great, that just means I could like go to all the Ralph's and get them. But it was like two Ralph's had lunchboxes, and none of the others.
Can you contact a supplier in China?
I've tried, literally, the thermos lunchboxes were actually made in the U.S.
Well, that's good to know.
Yeah. That's except that they stopped, maybe. Or maybe they just manufactured. They were like, we've made all that we need. This will last us 5 years. Like, wow. I don't know.
I did a one-man show called Cowboy Tommy where I had all these little battery-operated cows that went across the prairie as I sang songs. So I needed a lot of cows because they would break all the time. I mean, three would break per show. So I actually got on the web. I bought them from China. They shipped them to me in a huge box where I was buying 50 at a time of the thing. So I don't know. Maybe look on the internet.
Yeah. I mean, like I've tried. I don't know.
No, can't do it?
I mean, I feel like the success I had the first time was maybe like, I don't know. I mean, like the thermos ones I think are made in the U.S. So if I got one from China, it'd be like a knockoff.
Right.
I mean, I've looked at, you know, like you said, the...
But your work is the knockoff of an actual lunchbox, though. So that would be part of the commentary, wouldn't it?
Maybe you're right.
Did the Christopher Walken Making Robots in His Basement painting sell?
Yes, actually. And that was... I was able to do this artist-in-residence thing at Cornell. So I sold it, like, right before I basically, like, packed all my stuff in the car and, like, drove across the country. And, like, somebody bought it.
Wow. When you do an artist-in-residence, I mean, did you apply to do that? Did they ask you to do that?
It was...
Of this pop cultural commentary artist, so, what did they...
I got that position off Craigslist.
What?
Yeah. Like, I went to school in Santa Cruz and kind of bummed around in Santa Cruz for a year or two after that. And eventually I was like, maybe there's stuff in other parts of the country I could do. And one night I looked on, like, the New York area Craigslist, and there was an ad that said College Stinks Artist in Residence. And, like, I read through this thing, and kind of buried in the thing was the fact that it was at Cornell. Like, the position was through the arts dorm. So it was sort of a campus life position, not a, like, art department.
Well, it's good to know for all of those parents spending all of that money to send the kids to Cornell that when they need an artist in residence, of course they do just, the natural thing and just go to Craigslist.
They just go to Craigslist. And, you know, they let the students at the dorm, like, pick who they wanted to come. So they were like, yeah, we like this stuff. Guys, stuff is great. Like, come here. And I basically got to hang out and make art and occasionally do kind of, like, life drawing and, like, art activities. But it was, like, a super fun, super experience. Like, just going to an Ivy League school and not having to do any work.
Like, wow. And just drawing Transformers and saying, yes, I was an artist in residence at Cornell University.
Yeah. But
That's pretty amazing.
Bonkers. Like, it was totally bonkers.
So what other – can we talk about just your other products? Because you talked about the importance to you of creating kind of a product out of it.
Yeah.
And it almost helps the art that it is, like, art, but it's a product.
And it's something that kind of anybody can, like – like, the joke is that it's something they're able to kind of hold in their hands.
So you make, like, cell phone covers, right? Do you still do that?
Yeah.
And what are your big selling cell phone covers? A couple popular ones.
I mean, the cell phone covers are, it's all through, like, a company in Georgia.
Oh, okay. So they license your art?
No, it's all kind of, like, made to order.
Ah.
So, yeah, I don't really know what the big sellers are.
Really? What's your favorite?
Of the cell phone covers?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm sorry, what a cop-out answer.
Oh, man. Do you like any of your work, Brandon?
No.
Not really. You just kind of do it. You do it in order to
Actually, I mean, like sometimes I'm really, I shouldn't say I'm frustrated, but a lot of times if you're working under a deadline for, like, a show, you're just sort of happy that it's done and, like, out the door.
Right.
Because you're just like, oh, God, it's done, guys, it's done. Oh, good, it's done. Right. I don't want to look at that again.
Because what people don't think about is the artist who's made 12 paintings that are very exciting and vibrant. And then, but then when you're doing a show, a gallery will say, yes, we would like 30 more of these, something like this. Yeah. And after you do those first six of the new ones, it starts to feel like you're just, you know, people are just placing orders. Mm-hmm. And you're kind of a short order cook. You're just kind of like, eggs over easy. Let's make one like this, and let's make one like that, and let's put...
Yeah,
let's revisit that Hillary Clinton wrestling the Iron Sheik idea.
Yeah.
So what people
but
don't...
I like the Eric Roth, the painting for the lunchbox. Mm-hmm. That was one of those where I was like, yes, this was just so much fun to like paint his cheeks and his face and his like kind of greasy hair. And like when that like finished, I was like, this was way better than I ever imagined. I was like, I love this Eric Roberts.
Did you paint Eric Roberts because you love Eric Roberts, or did you paint Eric Roberts because you hate Eric Roberts?
I don't hate Eric Roberts.
Do you not?
In fact, earlier this year, I met Eric Roberts, and I gave him one of those lunchboxes, and it was the most sublime experience of my life. Because
did he know about you or know
yes,
about the? He knew that there was a lunchbox.
Really
out.
Silly. Like he was a guest at the Doctor Who convention down by the airport. Because he was in the...
Was he in the Doctor Who?
He was in the 1996 TV movie. Like, Fox did this Doctor Who TV movie, and he was the villain.
So he comes down to the airport.
Yeah. And I was like,
show up.
You know what? I had one pink lunchbox remaining. I'm like, I'm going to give this last one to Eric Roberts. And I'd heard, like, on Twitter that maybe he'd, like, missed a panel that he was supposed to be at, and people were kind of mad at him, and... And I went down there with my friend, and we're like, he's not here. He's not at his table. And I
maybe
was like,
he was talking to Dr. Drew.
I was kind of like, is he not here? Like, what? And I was kind of crestfallen, and we went and like got a snack. I'm just sitting here with my lunchbox like by my side, and somebody walks by, and he's like, oh, you know, he's here, right? And I was like, is he really? Is he really here? They're like, yeah, he was like, you know, off at a panel, but he just got back to his table. I was like, oh, well, I should go talk to him. And it's still in the back of my mind because Eric Roberts has played lots of, you know, villains and crazies. And I was like, he's either, he could hate this. He could like strangle me with his bare hands. Like, I don't even know. Like, this could be dangerous. I could be making a huge mistake.
But it was kind of gutsy to have done that work and to say, I'm going to go stand in front of Eric Roberts and I'm going to hold this lunchbox.
Yeah. And as I'm like, here you go. And he's like, his like face like lit up. He was so happy, and his wife was there with him, like manning the table. And they're like, "Oh yes, our daughter Emma told. She was telling him. She was like, Dad, you have a lunchbox. You have a lunchbox." And they're like, "Oh man, you made this thing." And he had me sign it to him. And then he just like gave me the biggest bear hug ever. Like rubbing his cheek against mine, and he was so happy.
There was cheek rubbing.
Yeah. But it was just like. He was clearly like a person who was just like having the time of his life, just like being alive and meeting people at the Doctor Who convention with his wife on a, you know, Sunday afternoon.
Maybe Eric Roberts has it right.
I'm
totally screwed up.
That's what I started to think. I was like, I think this guy's got it figured out. You just
be Eric Roberts.
Yeah.
And
you just relax. And when people are like, hey, you want to be in a movie? You say yes and you do it.
And that's all.
Like that.
And then you just do it.
Yeah.
Wow.
But I was.
I didn't know, Brandon, that this podcast was going to change my life. You just have to chill out and just do what people say. When they want you in a movie, you just do it.
Yeah.
Guy offers you a lunchbox, you take it.
Yeah.
Have him sign it and hug him. Start rubbing his cheek with your cheek. I mean, don't go farther than that, but cheek rubbing, definitely. So I'll let you go. I know I've taken up too much of your time, but you're working right now. I don't know what that character is, but in this sized Masonite that you have in front of us here at your studio, is that
it is
that a crime fighter of some kind?
Yes.
Do you talk about works that are in progress?
I try not to, just because usually if I talk about it, it won't be like, you know, eight months later, it'll finally be done.
All right. Kind of. Everyone must, if we're going to talk about this, you have to understand that artists can half do a painting, put it aside, and then work on another thing because they think, oh, I wrecked that painting. And then it takes 6 months, and then they look at it again and go, well, maybe it's not wrecked. Let me take it. Let me bring it back and do it.
It's a variation on a Batman.
Oh, okay. It's a variation on a Batman. Yeah. So it is it's kind of Batman as you might imagine Batman in a different situation than Batman usually finds himself.
Sort of. I don't want to give away the joke until it's done.
What is with the merry-go-round? That's my only question.
Merry-go-round?
Yes, he's riding. I was just making it up to try to, you know, I was trying to do a smoke screen, Brandon, to confuse the audience, and you didn't pick it up at all.
Nope.
All right, we won't talk about the Batman in an unusual
situation.
Are you thinking about Storage Wars work? I'm not saying work. I said thinking.
Yes,
that's good. You are considering something.
That's possibly also possibly. A wedding present for somebody, but maybe they won't listen to this podcast.
I could cut it out if you like. Would you like me to cut that out? Or maybe?
Nah.
No. Okay. Nah. We'll just say you're an artist and you're considering many things. And you're like, let's talk about your future work. What are you thinking about doing? Is it the same kind of thing? Is it bigger sizes? Is it what kind of things are really, you know, floating your artistic boat right now?
The number one thing I'm focusing on is actually like finishing some stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've had paintings I've been working on like all year. It's like, geez, am I still working on this? Like these two right there, like a Ghostbuster one and a Law and Order one.
I'm trying to think of who said it. I think it was William Merritt Chase. An artist, every artist needs a person standing next to them with an axe.
Oh God!
to write when the painting is done. To actually kill them with the axe before they just keep working on it and wreck it.
Was he talking about George Lucas?
Well, exactly. That thing, the tendency of everyone to, even when it's done, you look at it across the room and think, if only I could work on that leg, and it'll just never be done.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, this year my excuse is actually next fall I have a book coming out.
And what's the title of that book? If it's okay to say.
Something like The Art of Brandon Bird kind of thing. It's going to be
a weird title, but go with whatever you think, Brandon.
It's like it's more of a coloring book than like a big heavy coffee table book.
Oh, okay.
So it'll have like a huge coloring section and stickers and postcards and then color reproductions of some of the paint. It'd be like a gift book. Like, hey, look at this crazy fun stuff.
Wow, that seems, I mean, that's kind of expensive to produce, isn't it?
Well,
is a company doing it? Are you doing it yourself?
Chronicle Books.
Mm-hmm. The Art of Brandon Bird or something like that. When is that coming out?
Late summer or early fall, I believe. They haven't set the actual, like...
So you're working quite a lot on paintings and work for that?
This summer, like when that finally like came together, it was like... Put aside the paintings I'm working on and get, because the coloring section, that's when there'll be like a lot of new kind of black and white stuff and activities and so on. So that's what I spent like summer doing. And now I'm trying to get back like, oh, wait, I still have these paintings to finish. Let me finish those. And hopefully next year I'll have a book coming out and I'll have a big pile of new work also ready.
Where can people see your work live? Are there galleries where they can see it?
I kind of stopped doing consistent
gallery shows like that.
Yeah, yeah. It's more like if I come up with a show idea I want to do, I'll find the space and kind of make it happen.
So now it's mostly web presence, which is what is your
It's brandonbird.com.
Brandonbird.com, Brandon Bird.
com
would be com would be com. Thanks so much for giving me some of your time.
Thanks
today,
for
Brandon.
Letting me talk
I enjoyed the work a lot, and I just thought it would be ironic for me, you know, a person who's known for that, you know, that sort of that unusual low level pop cultural celebrity to go into the the jaws of the pop culture beast and talk about Eric Roberts lunchboxes and Hillary Clinton wrestling the Iron Sheik and various and Batman on a merry-go-round.
Yeah.
So thanks very much. I appreciate it, buddy.
Thank you.
Well, I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Brandon. Please check out his website, www.brandonbird.com. He's got product there. He's got prints. He's got prints for $10 or $20. Very, very interesting stuff. I liked it very much, and I hope you do. Thanks so much for listening to the podcast. Consider telling a friend or subscribing. Thanks to Emily Wilson for producing. Thanks to Chris, Katie, everybody over at Nerdist Industries. Thanks to McPherson Guitars for helping me out on my live show. Hey, there's a live show coming up in Syracuse, New York. There's a new club opening up. I think it's the 17th of January. I don't know. Look me up. I'll be there. I don't know. I'll find the next podcast. I'll have more better information. But about the 17th of January, Syracuse, New York. But hey, thanks so much for listening, and we'll talk to you next time. Bye.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.